Hey guys, it's Scott. Before we released the show, I was editing, and all of a sudden, the New York Yankees go out and sign Mr. Neil Walker, another second baseman slash third baseman slash utility guy slash first baseman, to add to the mix. We recorded last night, so we did not include this in there, and I wanted to just briefly mention it and talk about it. We'll definitely get all into depth during the next episode, but this looks like a one-year deal, right around $5 million, pending a physical. Look, I think a lot of people are going to be up in arms because the kids are not going to be in the Bronx for the very beginning of the season. But if you take a step back and look at the entire team aspect and you take a more macro look at what is happening, Neil Walker comes in and provides a switch hitter bat that can play in multiple positions, that used to be a middle of the order guy. Like, the guy can hit, doesn't strike out a lot, and gives them another veteran presence so that these kids can go and acclimate and just get even better in Scranton and AAA. And, you know, come middle of the season, let's say there's an injury, let's say one of these vet guys that are up right now are not playing well. Well, Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone have an embarrassment of riches now in Scranton, with these guys getting just completely seasoned and working on their craft while they're down with the Rail Rider. So, look, I saw it. I was very surprised that this happened. But if you take a step back and actually look at what the team looks like now, the team is a lot deeper. The team is better currently, I think, because of the experience that Neil Walker brings. And look, this guy's been hurt in the past. So it's a pretty low risk contract. 1 year, $5 million. I mean, we're talking almost Chris Carter terms. So this is not something that's going to really completely change the dynamic of what the Yankees look like, I think, into the future, but it does currently change, I think, what happens right now and the way that they're approaching spring training. So it looks like Drury's most likely going to be the third baseman. Neil Walker's going to come in as the second baseman, and that's probably how they're going to start the season. But who knows? Spring training can play out. We'll dive deeper into that next episode. But for now, happy Monday and enjoy today's episode. We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 214. Scott, how's it going? We've had a busy weekend for recording and live streaming things.
Yeah, we've been doing all sorts of stuff. We went on yesterday during the Yankees Mets game, and had a good time talking with, you know, a few different people were in there. And
Alex,
brought them
Alex
on live.
And Frank joined. Yeah, it's something that Scott and I mentioned. If you did not watch the live stream, we did like 2 hours on Saturday afternoon. It's something we want to do during the regular season a lot more, where go live during a game, and it's not going to be our normal show where we run through a bunch of topics and stuff that happened over the week, answer mailbag questions. It's going to be just reacting to what happened. And if you were watching yesterday, we just went on some random ass tangents for about a good 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, literally watching the game, it's like sitting there watching the game, drinking a beer with your buddies and hanging out. So that's what we're going to do more often. And we had four people on at one time, I think was the most yesterday when you got off. Joe McFly actually came on and was hanging out for a little bit too. The next time, I think if we do it with the software that we're currently using, we can actually get, I want to say, like eight people at one time. So we can have a whole Brady Bunch thing going on.
We're
going
to need to have you talk now. You're going to have to take a number, because even with four people yesterday, we were talking over one another.
Yeah. So we'll see. If not, we can like swap people in and out.
So this weekend, I was watching the Valspar tournament, watching Tiger. Is he back? Is he not back? All the people talking about that. It reminded me, 2 years ago this weekend, we were in Tampa for the first time. It was the first time we went down to spring training, and we were at that tournament on Saturday. I was watching and I was like, wait, why does this golf course seem familiar? Why does Valspar stick in my mind like something I should recognize? And it's because we went to this tournament.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I was like, "This, is there something about this that looks very familiar?"
The snake pit is what got me. When they mentioned the snake pit, I was like, "Snake pit? Like snakes? I don't know no snakes."
Well, they were talking about the Gulf, like it was in on the Gulf of, and then I was like, "Wait a minute, it's in Florida." Oh, I think we were there at this thing. That's where we saw. Who did we see play? Who was on the range?
You're gonna.
He was the biggest name. That was Vijay Singh. That was the biggest name I think we saw.
Well, too bad we didn't get to see Tiger, because
yeah, it would have been fun.
The people come out of the woodworks for the golf fans. Everyone goes out and watches Tiger. Everyone, Everyone, the ratings, I'm sure, were like quadrupled this weekend. But
oh yeah, definitely.
We're get that. The one thing it made me realize is we're damn close to being down in Tampa.
Yes, we have what, 2 weeks now, and we will be in Tampa, and we're going to that Friday game and going to the Saturday game. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited for it. It's going to be a really short trip for me. I have like the flights from hell because the flights were just terrible when I was looking at them. So, yeah, it's going to be a very quick turnaround, well, but I'm glad we can get two games in. I know you did, and I remember how miserable you were.
So the thing was, last time, two years ago when we were down there, as I was just saying, it was daylight savings weekend as well, so we sprang forward.
Oh, yeah. It was on top of
my flight was 6 a.m., but it was really like 5 a.m. because you fast-forwarded an hour. We attempted to go out all night. We're like, screw it. We're just going to drink all night. There's no point. I got to go to the airport at 5 o'clock in the morning anyway. We made it to like 4 a.m., which was probably the dumbest decision to do, was to go to bed from 4 a.m. to 4:45 a.m. and then wake up and go to the airport.
Who's we?
My decision. That was the.
But I was going to say, I don't think I was up till 4 a.m., was I?
Yeah, we were both up till 4 a.m.
Oh, gee. Okay.
You passed out on the couch, and I remember I left for the airport. You were laying on the couch. I was like, he's going to either die or he's going to live. This is up to him. I am no longer responsible for this man. But I remember I had a three-hour layover in the Atlanta airport, and I slept like a homeless person on the benches. Except they don't have the armrests that go up because they don't want people sleeping on them. So I wedged myself underneath the armrest and trying to get like an hour and a half of shut-eye because I was so damn hungover. Never again, man. Never again. I'm too old for that shit.
I'm doing that this time. I have a 5 a.m. I think it's a 5 a.m. flight. So,
but you're not going to try and attempt and stay out all night. We're going to go to the game on Saturday. We have the 30 people coming to the game. It's
the
open
problem
bar.
I say that now that I will not attempt to do anything stupid.
I will drug you. I will drug you, and you will be out by 10 p.m. so you can get at least a couple hours sleep.
I'll be okay. I'll handle it. I'm a seasoned vet by this point. At this point. we'll see what happens. I'm just glad Uber is around at like 3 a.m.
But it's going to be a nice warm-up for April 7th, which is right around the corner, the first Saturday home game of the season against Baltimore. It's our first event. It's a 1 o'clock game on Saturday. The tickets are on sale if you go to the Bronx Pinstripes fan shop. If you go to any of our social media sites, you'll see the link there. You guys probably listening know the deal. We have a pregame party at the dugout where you get drink specials. For $64 total, you get a game ticket in right field in section 205 or 206, which is an awesome seat. First of all, the face value of that ticket is already worth the $64. We're going to be doing a pregame party at the dugout an hour and a half before the game. You get drink specials, $4 Tallboy PBRs, and then you can also do the $10 domestic draft pitchers. So you can really be economical about your pregame drinking with this deal. And you can only get the deal if you're part of the event. And then you also get the T-shirt, which is custom designed specifically for that event. So it's an awesome deal. I can't wait for it. That place is going to be rocking. Like I said, it's the first weekend home game.
Yeah, we've already sold over 100 tickets. We're a month away. So I expect usually the way that this has gone in the past is that people, you know, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 3 weeks behind before it start loading up on these tickets. So we're over 100 tickets already. If you're getting your group together, get that going and definitely sign up. You can sign up as a group. We'll put you together and do all that stuff. So I'm coordinating the tickets. But in order to get the T-shirt, we're going to have a cutoff date. I'll announce it when it is. But I don't know exactly when that is yet. But it's probably going to be about two to two and a half weeks before the event so that the shirt can come to you. I'm not bringing the shirts to the pregame this year because the pregame is going to be a cluster. It's going to be hard to.
It was too much stress. It was too much stress, honestly.
Yeah, and I want to have fun at the game too. So we're going to mail them out.
The thing that I noticed, especially on the June event last year, is you and I were just busy checking people in and giving out T-shirts. We didn't have a chance to talk to everybody.
Yeah, but definitely go and check that out. And the rest of the events are on there as well. I'm excited. Dan is Dan Latourio. He's on Facebook right now saying that he has a 6 a.m. flight in Tampa on that same weekend. So
you guys can
maybe
carpool to the airport.
Maybe
together.
We're carpooling. Yeah, you can make sure I hit my flight.
Why don't you run through the rest of the events just to remind people?
Just quickly, it's May 26th. Again, these are all on the website. May 26th against the Angels. That's the pregame is going to be at the brewery. June 29th versus Boston, that's a Friday night game. July 22nd versus the Mets, that's a Sunday night baseball game. Again, at the brewery for a pregame. And then August 18th, which is the 1998 celebration. That's when the Yankees do their whole celebration for the championship team. And the final game is September 15th versus Toronto. It's a 4 o'clock game at the stadium.
Before we get into topics, you got to tell people about how they can get a good night's sleep, right?
Winter is here still. All right, winter, let's wrap it up. I know, I don't know about you, but cleaning and clearing out closets makes me feel like spring will be here any day. Did you know decluttering your bedroom can also help you feel more relaxed so you can sleep more restfully? Perhaps it's time to consider a fresh new mattress. 9 out of 10 couples prefer a different mattress firmness. Sleep Number bed, you can choose your ideal firmness on each side of the bed just so it's right for both of you. The new Sleep Number beds are smart. They sense your every move and automatically adjust to keeping you sleeping comfortably. There's even an adjustment for snoring. Does your bed do that?
No.
Sleep Number queen mattresses are only $899 right now. Spring clearance event, you can save up to $600 on the most popular beds. There are more than 550 Sleep Number stores. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx to find any store near you.
Giancarlo, our guy Stanton, had a big week. First of all, he was on the cover of Men's Health, flashing those pecs, looking all swole on the cover of Men's Health and having videos out there of him swinging a bat, taking batting practice shirtless. What'd you think of that move by him? Did it have some shades of our boy Alexander Emmanuel Rodriguez?
Well, he wasn't kissing. He wasn't making out with himself in the mirror.
Not yet.
That's the rule. And he wasn't sunbathing in Central Park. Mm-hmm. He wasn't doing the things. See, there's little things you can do within the scope of doing these like shirtless things that a lot of athletes do that make you very much like an A-Rod. Yeah. That make it very different than A-Rod. And how he performs his thing. So,
but
it's fine. I'm sure the ladies loved Giancarlo, and I'm sure he accomplished what he wanted to do.
I mean, those pecs don't quit. But could you imagine Aaron Judge doing something like this?
No. Not in a million years.
Even if Men's Health like approached him, I don't think he would do it. Like, he did the cover of MLB The Show, so he's obviously not opposed to being front and center of attention, being like, give me the sponsorships, I want to make money. But I don't think he's going to be posing shirtless on a Men's Health cover or something like that.
They're such different personalities. And I mean, you look at them, their stature is very similar. You look at the way that they play, and you see a lot of similarities in their game on the field. When you start talking to them and you go off the field, they're very different people. Mm. And no, Judge wouldn't do anything like
that's
that.
Fine,
but
though,
whatever, it's just their personalities.
Like,
it's all
mentioned,
good.
You mentioned even on the live stream we were doing yesterday, like, you had the perception that Stanton was a dick before he got to New York.
I said some of the things that he said when he was in Miami came across as a bit arrogant. I didn't go as far as calling him a dick, but I'm saying that, yes, I that's how I picked up on that.
Right.
Things.
Do you...
And I've changed my mind.
You've changed your mind, though, right?
I have, yeah. And maybe that's because I'm just in love that he's on the Yankees.
Yeah,
I'm sure that has something to do with it.
You've got your pinstripe blinders on.
Yeah, I'm totally biased at this point. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I think I can identify what people are and how I perceive them in a logical way and without looking at the uniform. And I think I didn't hear enough from him to really know who he is. And he's a very confident guy. There's no doubt about it. But he just kind of says what's on his mind. And I think sometimes when you hear that in segments, people who speak their mind in a confident way, it can come across as arrogant.
I just always took it as he's got a big personality. And
I don't even think he's got a big personality. I think that's even the right thing.
I think he does.
I don't think he's got he's not afraid to speak his mind.
He's not afraid to speak his mind. Look what he did in the press conference, basically calling out the Marlins organization. Like I said, he put that crap behind him. He called out the Marlins organization. He got everything off of his chest, including his shirt for the cover of Men's Health. And he said, I'm putting this crap behind me. Now I'm going to just play baseball for the Yankees. But I think he has a big personality, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
I mean, Nick Swisher has a big personality. I'm thinking of people who are way more outgoing. Like, he's still a stoic.
Harper has a big
personality.
He's
more reserved.
Bryce
no,
Harper.
I don't think he does. I don't think Bryce Harper has a big personality.
All right, well,
he doesn't talk that much.
All right, this conversation is...
He's cocky.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Stanton, actually, what he's doing on the field. And he hit on his first home run of spring. It was a little bit right center field. He's only been hitting the ball to right field. Do you make anything of that?
I think it's good. I think it's a very good sign when you see a guy this early in spring training going the opposite way. I mean, that was something that he had worked on. I remember seeing interviews and stuff when he shortened his stance and really closed it off. Going the other way is, I mean, he's set up to do that, I think, a lot more easy now with his body position as well. But, you know, it's impressive to watch when he does the way that he could just swat at the ball. Because like I've been talking about, you know, when we were watching the game yesterday, like the way that he, if you're watching him now, and we all are, and we're all studying now, you know, how he swings and like his approach and things like that. It's just such an easy, compact, short swing. And he doesn't do much with his lower half. He just kind of gets his body in position and not like a overexertion by any means, and just swats at the ball and it goes a mile. It's pretty fun to watch.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about is because pitchers are going to attack him in just like they attack Judge in. When you've got a body of that size, the way to get them out is crowd them. If you throw it out over the plate, they can extend their arms and then the baseball is going to go a million miles. Like you're going to get absolutely crushed. So with Stanton's closed stance, does that make him susceptible to some of the inside pitches if the pitchers are pounding him in with hard stuff in? Like, I don't know the answer. Obviously not. He had an amazing second half last year. And at Yankee Stadium, if he's going to right field, that's a good thing because he's going to get even more. He's going to get some cheap home runs at Yankee Stadium. Like, I don't know. I think, I forget who did it, like StatCast or somebody put out the overlay of like Stanton's home runs. He wouldn't have had any more home runs at Yankee Stadium because Stanton doesn't hit them just over the wall. He hits them 50 feet over the wall. So it doesn't matter where it goes. But I have to imagine there's going to be some fly balls he hits to right field at Yankee Stadium that just go 4 or 5 rows deep, just like Aaron Judge did last year.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, when Aaron Judge was hitting those balls, what we've realized that when Aaron Judge was even not at the top of his game, and he talked a bunch about this, you know, when they're talking about the way his swing is and how long it's in the zone. I mean, even when he misses, he's getting the ball on the bat. And anytime a man of that size can make contact with the ball on the bat, you know, good things can happen. And those fly balls that would normally be outs at most stadiums that he's just kind of getting the ball, throwing the barrel at the ball on an outside pitch, they're going out of the stadium at Yankee Stadium. So, yes, he's benefiting from that. And I think Stanton will, too. I think some mistakes that Stanton has will go out because of that short porch and the fact that he can go the other way. So it absolutely plays to his strengths. Like left field's not going to be a problem. When he pulls the ball, it's not going to be a problem because it's going to be out.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned on the stream yesterday, and I feel like I'm repeating myself, but at the same time, I realize not everyone heard it, is that we were talking about how pitchers are going to attack both Judge and Stanton the same way. CeCe even mentioned it, I believe, on the R2C2 podcast, where he said, I was thinking, how would I try and get Giancarlo Stanton out? Oh, it's the same way I would try and get Aaron Judge out. Just pound him in with stuff and try and crowd him, get him to roll over and try and hit a ball weakly to the infield. So I think the thing that Stanton and Judge are going to benefit most from each other is talking about how pitchers are attacking them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that they're probably doing already, just, you know, getting when they're working in the cage, because they're so similar in the way that they physically are. You know, there's a lot of, like you said, a lot of approaches are going to be similar for the pitchers, but you know, their swings look totally different. Like that's what's crazy.
Yeah, crazy thing is that their swings are so different. Their stances are so different.
Yeah. I mean, Stanton is totally closed off. Aaron Judge is much more open now. Yeah. He's still closed off, but he closed much more open compared to Stanton, but he's closed off considerably to where he was before. I mean, first half of the season,
he's kind of parallel. Like he's
even first half of the season, he was more closed off than he was in the second half. And we were always like, you know, why is he open back up? Why is that?
Well, that's the thing
during the struggle. And it could have been because of that shoulder.
Exactly. We were like, doesn't it seem like he's pulling off the ball more? And he was favoring the shoulder. It was his left shoulder that was hurt. So he couldn't lead to hit the ball to the opposite field as a right-handed hitter. You have to lead with your left shoulder, and Judge's shoulder was hurting him. So obviously he was doing things differently. He mentioned Judge even hinted he's not going to do the home run derby again. I wonder if it really was because he hurt himself.
It's crazy. I mean, we joked about this. Like, did he really hurt himself in the derby? And you know, maybe he did. I mean, maybe it was in that area. You know, maybe it wasn't like at the derby. It could have been afterwards. It could have been somewhere around that time when he wasn't playing baseball for a while and had that time off. but then you go hard for, you know, that short amount of time. It's different than what you normally do all year long. So look, he's being very vague about it. So it's leading me to believe more and more that, yeah, he did hurt himself during the Derby.
If he does not, I think Judge probably was like, I'm one and done. I proved I can win the Derby. I was the robot created to hit home runs in a home run Derby, and that's great. One guy I think who really wants to win the home run Derby is Gary Sanchez. And I think that's because he kind of feels slighted with Stanton and Judge getting all of the attention.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that has easy power that could go up and is actually kind of built for those derbies. Like, he could go up and just smash the ball. So but the problem is now, if he wins without Judge being in it, that's a conversation that'll always come up.
Yes, but
it's like winning a dunk competition back in the 90s when, if Jordan's not in it. But like, does it really count?
But Judge is such a nice guy that
I just compared Judge to Jordan.
That he
indirectly.
He wants to let. That's okay. Didn't we compare Jordan Montgomery to Clayton Kershaw yesterday?
Yeah. Almost exact replicas.
Judge is such a nice guy that he wants to let his teammate win. He wants to let his teammate Gary get some time in the spotlight.
Yeah, I think he should do it. I mean, one of those three guys is 100% going to have to do it, right? So they're going to have. We're going to have a guy in that Derby. I think that's not something that Yankee fans are going to miss out on. And I think we're lucky now that we have a whole bunch of dudes who can hit a home run. I'd like to see Bird in the Derby.
Would Bird ever do it?
Maybe. Depends where it is. Depends on how good of a season he's having. God knows he is an injury risk for the Derby, though, and that will be the topic of discussion if he ever tried to enter that thing. Like Brittle Bird trying to enter the Derby after Aaron Judge just gets, you know, the suspicion of Judge getting hurt in the Derby the year before. I don't know.
We could get a solid 3 hours of podcast material out of will Greg Bird get injured doing a home run Derby?
Yeah, there's a million things that could happen with him. So yeah, I don't want him to do it.
I mentioned Montgomery. So Boone named him the fifth starter without officially naming him the fifth starter. He said, I see it as his job. And really, who else is it going to be other than Jordan Montgomery? Monty is going to be the fifth starter. No surprises there. Why do you think they're not like officially announcing it? Like, he has a place in the rotation. Do you think it's just because...
I think it's just an unsaid... he's the fifth starter. He's always been the fifth starter, hasn't he? What has led anything to believe that he is not the fifth starter? Like, nothing. Zero things have come up that says he's not the fifth starter. There's nobody else there. Chad Green's not a starter. Like, maybe he would have been one of the guys that if he actually had stayed as a starter and they were legitimately serious about making him a starting pitcher. But that's not the case.
So you know how in the first 2 weeks of the season, because there's extra off days, you can actually get away with four starting pitchers?
Yeah.
Do you think the Yankees do that, or will they have five?
I mean, I think they'll have five. If the schedule works out, I think they'll still go five. I mean, I don't think they're going to... They're going to try to I think Aaron Boone is going to try to get into his regimens as early as possible. I don't know how the schedule plays out. Like, does it work out where the off days allow for the four games? Because I know some teams are doing that.
The deal is when you play, although usually the season starts on a Monday and this year it's starting on a Thursday. So I don't know.
It depends on the team and the schedule, because I know there's a, I forget who we just played that's going with four, but it's all because of their schedule. It's Tampa. Yeah, that's right.
Tampa. Kevin Cash said that they are gonna at least start the season with four starters in bullpen, which is...
But that means nothing. I mean, it's just because of the way that they're scheduled. I think they have like 8 days off in a very short amount of time.
Brian Kenny's wet dream.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, it doesn't matter. There are no starters. Four pitchers. Yeah. Don't call them starters.
No, but I think it used to be. I don't know how the schedule is this year because, again, like I said, it's starting on a weird day. But it used to start on a Monday, but then you always used to have an off day for no reason the next day. So it was sort of – and then the next time – you would always start at home on a Monday, and then you'd play away the following Monday, but it would be some other team's home opener. And then they would have an off day after that. So it was like you'd have two off days you wouldn't normally have in the first like 10 days of the season.
Either way, I just don't think it was. This is what was bothering me so much in the off season is that, you know, all this speculation about adding a starter when we have a perfectly good fifth starter in Jordan Montgomery, who was a rookie last year, who showed extremely well, who I have no doubt is going to go out there and has put in the work and is trying to get better. Like, the kid seems like he's got the tools to put things together. I mean, I like him as a pitcher. I really do. So I never really understood the whole let's add somebody, because if we ever added somebody, that means Jordan Montgomery doesn't have a spot at that point. And I don't really get that.
Well, how do you feel with considering the deals that have been handed out this week? Like Arrieta just today, as we, before we recorded, got 3 years, $75 million, which is pretty substantial annual money from the Phillies. And Lance Lynn got 1 year, $12 million.
Yeah, that's, I mean, people are pining that the Yankees should have gotten, you look at the contracts, look at the, what the, how the deals came out. Like, I don't think Arrieta was in play. I don't think they ever should have. I think the two guys that the Yankees were potentially looking at really, well, after Cole got dealt, that would maybe make sense if you're on that side of the argument, is Cobb and Lance Lynn.
Like, but they were never linked to either of those guys.
But they were never linked to them. But those would be the type of guy, right?
I agree. Sonny Arrieta. Yet they were vaguely linked to Yu Darvish.
Right. And to me, again, this was going back to Brian Cashman saying, okay, I don't need you, but if I could get you on my terms, I'll contemplate it. And I'll at least like listen to what's going on. To me, that was the whole play. Like Brian Cashman was just going out there doing his job. And he was saying, this is what I have to offer. And kind of feeling the waters out and seeing where they were. And if a guy like Yu Darvish fell in their lap, worked out with the salary, and he was able to stay under the luxury tax and set himself up, then he could think about it seriously. But only if it fell in his lap and on his terms. So that's it. Like, he was the guy that potentially going after. Arrieta, you've seen a drop off over the past few years. The fastball velocity's down. Like, he's returning back. I'm surprised. I personally wanted to see him make a return to Baltimore and just suck again. So it would have been a total full circle of a baseball career. It would have been beautiful.
I think it's actually a really good move for the Phillies, though, because they get, it's only 3 years. So if he really, really sucks, which he's not going to really suck because he's still a solid pitcher, at least they're not locked in long term. And the Phillies, like, they've done a lot. The Phillies are trying to win, obviously.
And they're young. Well, they're also very young, too. So they have having a vet like that, a guy that could come in and make a, because they got a pretty good haul when they sent
Hamels.
What's his face? Yeah, but and also the closer for the Astros from the Phillies, they got a bunch of starting pitchers. So they have a young team and a lot of good, you know, like a lot of good prospects moving forward. So I think when you have a guy like Arrieta who can come in and basically anchor a staff of young guys, it's a good move for sure. Yeah. And I mean, it's a relatively friendly contract for a guy like him. I mean, if we're considering what of contracts past.
Yeah, it's high AAV, but it's 3 years. So
exactly.
So yeah, I actually, I wouldn't have liked that contract for the Yankees, but that's not because of the 3 years. It would be because they would be over the luxury tax at that point.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. That wouldn't have been a fit. Like you said, the average annual salary, it would have blown all of the plans out of the water that what Brian Cashman and the Steinbrenners have been trying to do. So look, they stayed to the plan, and that's fine. I still will never understand why everybody was so up in arms and saying that the Yankees need to go out and bolster the rotation, make it better. Because if you're doing that, then one of these guys is going. And Jordan Montgomery certainly does not deserve to be in AAA right now.
You know what I honestly think? I think some Yankee fans are just plain stupid. And they look and they see they brought in Giancarlo Stanton. I know that guy. Hey, that's a name I know. Oh, did he just win the National League MVP? So we added the NL MVP to the offensive side. What are we doing for the pitching side? We're not adding anybody? What the hell, Brian Cashman? Why aren't we adding anybody? It's just headlines. Yeah. They didn't make any headlines in the rotation.
I guess. I mean, they did because Tanaka re-signed. So Tanaka's back.
No, that wasn't a headline, though. That was like, oh, Tanaka re-signed. So that's on like page 5 of the newspaper. No one reads newspapers anymore anyway.
I was going to say, who's written the newspaper?
That's just slipped
and
in on
And there's no
Twitter.
5 pages of a sports section.
That's slipped in on Twitter.
The thing is when you look at Tanaka, though, like that is a signing. That's a guy that could have very well been off the team that is now back on the team. So it's a big deal. They signed Sabathia. Another signing. So there were things that happened. Sonny Gray came over in the middle of the year. Another freaking potential ace.
We know this. You and I know this. 99% of the listeners right now know this. But there's still a lot of people out there who are casual fans who hear on sports radio, I need the rotation upgraded. Why aren't the Yankees updated?
Well, I mean, you have your guy that your guy or girl Yankee fan who wants a superstar at every single position. Like, those people exist. And it's not a practical way to
go.
And
do you remember that just failing miserably in the mid-2000s?
Yeah, and how about all the young guys in the early in the mid-90s to the late-90s that actually did well? And how about the youth movement that we have right now in the position players of the guys that we brought up through the system that have done very well? why are we not giving Jordan Montgomery that next step? He was good last year. It's not like he was bad. He wasn't bad. He was good. And we have kids that are coming up. Someone's talking about Anthony's talking about Adams and Sheffield coming in the rotation. Like, yeah, these guys are on the horizon for probably not this year. Maybe Adams we'll see. I don't think we'll see Sheffield this year, but they're coming up. We have prospects that are trying to take that next step and look like they have big league talent.
Jordan Montgomery finished sixth in Rookie of the Year voting last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Earlier, 10 minutes ago or so, you mentioned Aaron Boone trying to get in his rhythm. He was not in his rhythm. There's some trouble in paradise. On Saturday afternoon, Betances had to go out for a second inning of work because Boone did not communicate efficiently enough, his words, that Adam Warren was coming in the game next. What do you think about that?
I don't think much of it. I think it's spring training, and he's literally a brand new manager. So brain farts like this are going to happen. Miscommunications are going to happen. I'm glad he's getting them out of the way right now.
Do you know why it happened?
Because he's a brand new manager and was having a conversation. He was acting like he was broadcasting the game.
Yes. He was talking to Michael Kay. And,
It was in between innings.
It was that inning. It's like he's doing all these interviews in between innings. He's not paying attention to what's going on because he's chatting with Michael Kay. And who was the other? Was Flaherty doing the broadcast yesterday? I can't remember.
I was listening to it, so I don't know.
But I really think that's why he had a brain fart.
I mean, that's fine. It's going to happen. It's spring training. It's not that big of a deal. Betances probably needed the work anyway.
It's only spring training. But if something like that actually did happen in the regular season, he's going to get a lot of shit for it.
Yeah, there's going to be little things that people are going to give Aaron Boone shit for because they are going to be small managerial things. And hopefully they're not big ones, but small managerial things that he overlooks. It's going to happen.
How many minor things like this before we start to really get angry?
It depends on how they see. We all have to understand that if it makes a difference in the game, if it causes them to lose a game or it causes them something goes wrong or a guy gets hurt because of it or something along these lines, then it will be immediate. If they are just passes and nothing happens, then there's going to be a rope. But we're all emotional fans. So when these things start happening and we start seeing them, there's not going to be much. Like if you're asking on the fan side, probably not that much. There's going to be a little leeway. But the bottom line is if they're winning and it's not causing, you know, too much havoc on the game, which I 100% don't expect, we'll be all right.
But as you well know, even if it doesn't have a direct result on that night's game, what if it affects the next game? What if Betances couldn't pitch the next night because he threw too many pitches on the previous night because he had to come out because Adam Warren wasn't warmed up?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many other things like that Joe Girardi would do by warming up a guy too much, you know, that we didn't even know about that he wouldn't be available. So
that shit would never happen.
It's all going to happen.
That would never happen even in spring training with Joe Girardi. But
Joe Girardi also managed the team for 10 years.
And
he was a manager before that.
Yeah.
So he's got a ton of experience. Like, well, this is going to happen. This is where everybody needs to get their – everybody has to put their expectation hat on and make sure they're completely in line because there are going to be bumps in the road with Aaron Boone. It's not going to be perfect. It's not. He's a brand new manager with a very young team. Shit's going to happen. It's going to be weird, and things are probably going to be bad at some point. They're going to go through a losing streak, and it's going to be even escalated, any of his little mannerisms that are new and people don't like. So this stuff is going to happen. This is not going to be – I think a lot of people have their rosy glasses on ready for like just pure bliss all year long because this team is exciting and young.
You are all in on Aaron Boone.
I am, but I also have my expectations in line knowing that there's going to be things like this that happen.
Yeah, so you're going to give them a pass. You're going to give them a couple passes.
I'm not going to I will acknowledge what they are, but I'm not going to kill them immediately unless it's just something that's totally ridiculous. I see my expectations are in line, I think. I know that shit like that's going to happen. I get it. Like I know that those things are going to happen. So, you know, I'm expecting them. And I don't think I won't be as, you know, crazy lunatic emotional about them if I think that they're not going to happen.
Should those things actually happen, though? Like, you have –
it's human nature, yes.
But it's not just the manager. You have the pitching coach. You have the bench coach. You have all these coaches and bullpen coaches and bullpen catchers. And there's 1,000 guys in that dugout and in that clubhouse who can tell someone, hey, get your ass up. Stretch. You're coming in this game. Be ready.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would happen more likely in the regular season. You'll have probably a guy who is – everybody's going to have a job. Everybody's going to have their delegated, you know, tasks for a given game. And yeah, I think there'll be help. I think you're going to see a lot of Larry Rothschild leaning on him for pitching, like not leaning on him in that way, but leaning on him in the sense of like this, you know, as a mentor for a lot of those things. So look, just know that these things are going to happen.
Yeah.
But it'll be okay because he's going to be a hell of a manager.
That's fair.
And Aaron Boone is a big personality.
Oh God. How can you call Aaron Boone a big personality, but not Giancarlo Stanton?
Because he's outgoing. I think as someone who is, I don't think Giancarlo Stanton's very outgoing.
Whatever. A couple injury updates. Tyler Wade rolled his wrist. That was scary on Saturday. We were watching the game during the live stream. He acted like he broke his wrist, and then like 30 seconds went by, and he's stretching. He's like, okay, it's fine. But for a minute there, for a second there, it looked like Wade really screwed his wrist up.
Yeah, I saw him. I think it was a quote from Brian Hoke when he was talking with Wade, saying that when he did roll on it initially, he thought it was, you know, he felt it go into the ground, the glove going to the ground. It got caught in the grass, and he felt it. And then he got scared because he thought it was something a lot more, and then got up and started flexing it and realized that it wasn't. So it was, I've been there, like, you know, when you like, if you're playing basketball or something and you like jam a thumb and you're like, I thought I broke my finger, and then you start working it out a little bit, and you're like, oh, I'm good, never mind.
And he tweeted after the game that he's okay, and it sucked because Wade's having a pretty solid spring, and as we were sort of kicking around ideas yesterday for the infield, he actually has a chance to be on the team leaving spring training.
Oh, there's no doubt, and you know, it's not a thing that's really affecting him anyway, so he's all good to go. And I, you know, I'm glad that it's not a big deal, because it would have been a shame for something like that to derail a guy who's got a potential. It reminds me of what happened to Brian Mitchell when he was going out there and vying for that fifth spot. What, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yes.
And he got that turf toe injury.
He was
going to
be the long man in the, like, he was going to be actually used in that bullpen because he had such an amazing spring, and he had the turf toe, and he was out for 3 months, and he was never the same.
Never really came back from it.
And actually, maybe it was a blessing in disguise, because 2 years later, he was the reason that the Padres took $13 million of Chase Headley's contract.
Yeah, your boy is gone now because of Brian Mitchell being bad. But yeah, no, it's a good thing that it really wasn't a serious injury. And I'm glad, because, you know, you want a guy to kind of like either make the team or not make the team on their terms. And, right. and obviously an injury derailing that is just, it's just a crappy way to end it if it were to be. So, but that's not the case.
Ellsbury's still not doing anything because of his oblique issue. This might last forever, so that's good news.
It really might last forever. It might linger on. This might be the end of Ellsbury, this oblique.
And another lingering thing, which is bad news, is Clint Frazier's concussion. He's calling his cats the wrong names. He says he's having trouble driving. I actually read something where they were talking about, should players be speaking to the media who are recovering from concussion symptoms? And the argument was no. Like, it's not fair to these guys. They're likely to say something stupid.
They're confused.
Yeah. And Cashman was actually saying, like, I think his comments make it sound like he's having a worse time recovery than what his actual symptoms are. Yeah. But the fact remains, Clint Frazier, it's been 2 weeks, 2+ weeks. When did he actually? It was like 2 weeks ago he hit his head.
Yeah, it was about that.
And he's still only doing like basic baseball drills, and he's calling his cats the wrong name.
Yeah, calling your cats the wrong name. That's pretty like brutal.
Fluffy and muffins.
Well, he probably has dogs actually, and he just thinks they're cats. But It's you know, it's just one of those things you don't mess with. It's the dealing with the head, and if he still has these lingering effects, then, you know, take your time, man. Again, this is another one of those things where you got a guy like Ellsbury who's hurt,
yes,
and Clint Frazier has a perfect opportunity to show that he can be a guy and contribute right now. He's missing an opportunity because of injury. So
he's
probably
very pissed at himself. Not at himself, but he's probably very pissed at
frustrated with the situation
he's in, because he has a chance now to be the fourth outfielder because Ellsbury's out with an injury. He could be out there proving himself. Otherwise, he's sitting on the bench.
Right. No, it
sucks.
It's not good. And you know who's out there and lighting it up, who plays the outfield and actually plays first base too, is a guy named Billy McKinney, who is interesting. If you're looking at a guy who's a fourth outfielder, everybody's been talking about Clint Frazier. Well, watch out, because there's going to be a battle if they're both in AAA. I'm very curious to see who puts up better numbers, and it would not surprise me if we see Billy McKinney going in there and light it up and actually show better on the field. It wouldn't surprise me. And the fact that he has the flexibility, I don't know. There's going to be some interesting things that happen in Scranton this year.
Can Frazier play first?
No. People were trying to get him to play third base at some point in the offseason. Remember that? That was a fun little conversation. No, he cannot. He's a left fielder. He pretty much he could play the outfield. He says he went up to Boone. I love this though about him. He went up to Boone. He's like, you know, I could play center field. If the center field job is open for competition, put me in, coach. I could play center field as well. I mean, you gotta love that. You gotta love the fact that he wants to play wherever he can to try to give more value to the team and show that he can do it, because he wants to be on this team badly. That's very much understood. Billy McKinney does too, though.
What do you think, moving on to free agency news? Moustakas also signed. He signed a contract with the Royals for $5.5 million. He can make $2.2 million extra in performance bonuses. And then there's a mutual option, which you don't see very often, for 2019 for $15 million plus $1 million buyout. So essentially, it's like a
$6.5 million with $2.2 in incentives.
Exactly. $6.5 million guaranteed.
It's crazy.
He turned down $17 million qualifying offer.
Right.
The dude hit 38 bombs.
He hit 38 home runs. He hit like 275, I think, last year. He plays a good defense, plays a good third base. It's pretty crazy to me that he is going back to Kansas City on a deal like that. Like, I'm firing Scott Boris at that point, right? Like, you're coming in.
This
and
has
you're,
happened.
You're advising
Boris,
me on how to do things.
This what? Happened. Boris and this happened with Boris and Steven Drew too. Where Boris told Steven Drew to turn down, I think it was from the Red Sox, like turn down like 20-something million guaranteed over a couple of years. I'm going to get you more than that. And then he ended up re-signing with Boston for like $4 million.
Yeah, well, that's exactly where he should have signed, for the amount. Like, that was probably more accurate. But it's bad advice. I mean, if you know what's going on in free agent, it seems like the agent should have caught a whiff of what was going to be happening and what the temperature of the market was this year. It doesn't seem like it was a big surprise. You know, there were so many guys waiting and waiting and waiting. They, you know, as an agent, if you're my
That's
agent,
easy to
like,
say
I,
now.
I want you to, I guess so, but I still want you to be having conversations with people to gauge interest on things well beforehand. So you have to, if you're turning down an offer like that, you kind of have to know what you're walking into, don't you?
So do you think the Yankees should have been in on Moustakas at 6.5 guaranteed?
Remember,
the big thing with him, though, there was a pick associated with him. There was a draft pick associated with him.
Right. Well, I see the fact that that Cashman went and got Drury, to me, makes that more of a moot point, because I like the deal for Drury as well. Like, I think the Drury deal is more of a long-term play. It adds so much more flexibility to the Yankees roster, and he's controlled. And he's a good player. Like, I like that move better. Maybe for 1 year, Moustakas is a better play, you know, at third base. But, you know, when you could get a guy like Drury for what he did, I think I take that deal over the Moustakas thing. But Moustakas, I mean, reading more about the Moustakas, he didn't even get an offer.
It's crazy.
That's on the agent.
It's crazy. He would have handcuffed the Yankees more than Drury's handcuffing them. And then right now we'd be saying, oh, shit, like Andujar is lighting it up, but right. We have to play Moustakas. I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It wouldn't
have
been a problem. Moustakas would have been a beast in this lineup.
Maybe, and who knows, if they sign Moustakas, maybe they trade Andujar.
I mean, I guess, but it's a one-year deal. You're looking at a one-year deal, a rental. So I think long-term plans don't really change. Moustakas is there.
I think everything, I mean, shit could be out the window next year if Manny Machado is out there.
That's true. There are things that could happen. I mean, I just don't know how many more trades Brian Cashman can make to this roster and improve it, you know, greatly without shuffling around players that really don't need to be shuffled.
It's fascinating, though, what Moustakas ended up signing for. And Jared Diamond, who we've had on the podcast a couple times, wrote something about Paul DeHong, who signed a contract extension with the Cardinals for $26 million guaranteed. And DeHong has only played in the majors for 1 year. So it was a lot of money guaranteed to a player who's not even close to arbitration, has only played 1 year. But DeHong is sitting there saying, you're going to pay me $26 million guaranteed? That's more than enough money for me. Lock me up through my arbitration years. I'm a little afraid of what could be coming up for me in free agency. So Diamond was kind of theorizing maybe more young players do this because they don't want to find themselves in a situation where it's finally their big payday and no one is willing to give them the dough.
Yeah, Well, I think this is this year, this offseason is going to be a very big awakening of what's happening. And, you know, we've seen baseball go through trends, right? Baseball trends around and like goes through different cycles and it gets very like faddy and like what's cool and what's hip at the moment. And young players right now are there's a lot of talent coming up. You know, that could dry out. There may be a couple year span where there just isn't as much talent in the minor leagues. And then you're seeing more of these free agents get signed. So it's going to ebb and flow, I think, like it always has. So, you know, you're definitely putting a lot of chance when you're saying like, one, there's two things that have to happen. You have to perform through these years as well to get those contracts. So if you're getting this money after a year and you're getting a $26 million guarantee before you're even really showing like all the things you can do, and then you're playing for that next contract, it's a young guy, it's enticing.
Well, it's not maximizing his earning potential.
It's not.
But it's
enticing at the moment.
It's securing his. I mean, let's face it.
But that's a risk. You know, $26 million is value. There's a lot of ifs in that whole.
He could
in that
blow
sentence.
Out his ACL, and right. He could never be the same. And yes. Then his career earnings are $500K. And that would be a horrible situation. And $26 million is so much freaking money. Like I actually respect Paul DeJong's. I believe I called him DeJong.
DeJong.
I respect him for saying, dude, $26 million. Are you kidding me? Like, what is the quality of life difference between $26 million and $90 million? It's way closer at those numbers than $500,000 and $26 million.
I mean, this is a really boring conversation if you're going to have this and talk more about it. But honestly, you get $26 million when you're at this age, and rather than waiting, you take that money and you have a guy that knows what they're doing and invest that money. That money will multiply many, many times. And, you know, who knows what it could be if you wait and you're not collecting, you're gaining whatever the percentage is on top of the money that you're putting away. You know, what, 5 years down the road, you're going to get a better contract. Okay. Is it worth it? Some would say no.
Right.
Depending on how you invest that.
I think it's a fascinating thing to talk about for two reasons. One, because the Yankees have a lot of players who are young who could be looking to do something like that, like Gary Sanchez, Luis Severino, Aaron Judge, Greg Bird. And also two, all of this could be out the window next year when Manny Machado signs for $300 million and Bryce Harper signs for $300 million.
It's going to be so interesting when we go through next year. And it's all said and done, and we know where everybody is for how much money they are, and then we compare that to what happened this year, and really just kind of look at the situation right at free agency at that moment. Just take a snapshot of the 2 years and what happened, because there's going to be so many things that it's gonna sway the market in a way that isn't realistic as well. So people are going to be expecting these bigger contracts coming in, you know, going into 2020, and all the money's going to be dried up because people spent it, and it's going to be a totally different story. So it could revert right back to people saving and saying, yeah, I'm not spending, if they didn't get the big guys. Although when you look at 2020, that class is pretty nice too. Like, there's a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. How many times did we say Arenado was in next year's class, but he's actually in 2020. There's a bunch of guys in that class too. So it's going to be interesting because I think there's a spending spree coming up. And I think that's one of the big reasons why.
Don't forget
we're
about
not seeing a lot.
The class of 2021, Jacoby Ellsbury is a part of that.
Oh, big time. People are definitely saving their pennies for that kid.
Let's give away some t-shirts. We scalded the listeners last week for not bringing the heat on the reviews, but we got some good ones this week.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to read this first one, and we didn't change the font again. So now it's all grayed out still, and it's very difficult to read. Okay, here we go. First one. We got two winners. I want to say thank you, first of all, before I read these and give these away. Thank you very much to everybody who reviewed. We do this because it means a lot to us. It really helps us out in the rankings in iTunes. More people can listen to the show, and that's important to us. We do this because we love doing it, so we want to talk to as many of you guys as possible. We're building a community around Bronx Pinstripes, so we're doing that. So thank you again for reviewing. If you haven't reviewed, please do so. It really means a lot to us, and we truly appreciate it. All right, two winners this week. The first one. This is a long, so stay with me on this one, but it's freaking hilarious, and it's got to win. So it's by, he says, pretty good, yeah, okay, I like it. 5 stars by Tim Sennett, like Bennett with an S. He says, you want a good Yankees podcast? He says, you want a good Yankees podcast? I said, do you want a good Yankees podcast? Well, look no further. Bronx Pinstripes might as well stand, or BP might as well stand for best podcast, because that's exactly what this is. And here's how I know. One, I listen to this podcast with such devotion that Andrew and Scott show up in my dreams where we are all best friends. And we're all best friends. Two, I even find myself finishing their sentences. Three, if it was Andrew and Scott versus the Yankees in the World Series, I would actually root for Andrew and Scott. Four,
that was my favorite one.
Listening to the podcast with headphones on is the only reason why I never heard my dad's last words to me. Unbelievable. Five, Scott Ryan is my go-to write-in candidate for all NYC elections. Bad choice. Six, I used to read kids to my bedtimes in bed. Kids' bedtime stories. Now I just play them on the podcast and make them stay awake to listen to the entire thing. Seven, I have called my wife Andy during sex more times than I'm comfortable admitting. Okay, eight. number eight. My friends roll their eyes every time I say it. That reminds me of this one time on the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Number nine, the friends that are left anyway. Number 10, my secret handshake with Scott and Andrew is so secret, they don't even know it yet. Look, that
round of applause for Tim, because I don't believe any of those 10 things, but I love the creativity.
That's good stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Stuff. It's a little weird that we're in your dreams, but yeah. You know,
slightly stalkerish.
I'll be your best friend.
So Tim, DM us, you're going to get a t-shirt. The next one is titled Awesome Show by Quad with like 40 A's and D's. Great podcast for Yankees fans. Golden ratio of hot takes to reasonable thoughts just to keep you on your toes. Yet to be seen which category 19-0 against the Rays falls into. That was also pretty creative.
Very good. Very good. And if you didn't, if you don't understand that, I will accept nothing less than the Yankees being 19-0 against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays this year because they're an abomination of the baseball team.
We believe they play 18 games against the Rays.
Or 18-0, whatever.
Yeah. All right, before we get to mailbags, guys, are you buying tickets? Or buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats and the best at the best prices, and they're fully guaranteed. I used SeatGeek very recently, Scott. Get this. I took the lady to a Broadway show. Use SeatGeek.
Oh,
so I classed
good
up
seats,
a bit.
Easy seats. There you go. Yeah,
very, very easy. Got it right on my phone. They grade the tickets so you know if you're getting a good deal. And like I said, they're fully guaranteed, so you're not getting ripped off. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports to concert to comedy and theater. Like I said, theater, class it up, take your lady to a Broadway play. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. To do this, download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code Bronx today. Again, that's the promo code Bronx for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Moving on to mailbags, Alex Filipponi, who was on our live stream yesterday, says, how do you think Boone will use the bullpen? Will Betances still be a setup man? Will Robertson be a setup man since he's the best option to replace Chapman if need be? Or will he be the fireman role since he's proven he can handle it? What roles would you give to all the relievers?
So I really think, I think that we're going to see some different stuff, obviously, in the bullpen from years past. I mean, I hope so, honestly. But I have a gut feeling that Aaron Boone is not going to be going in with completely set positions except for Aroldis Chapman. I think Aroldis Chapman is going to be the closer. He's going to pitch primarily in the ninth inning. Probably not going to see him outside that ninth inning, most likely, most of the time. Maybe a rare occasion. Who knows if he needs work or something like that. But I think he's going to be in the ninth inning. I think primarily we're going to see Betances is going to walk in, I think, as the eighth inning guy. Primarily, I don't think he's going to be set in that role because there are so many guys that can go in. Tommy Canley could do it. D-Rob could do it. Chad Green could do it. Like, we have guys that can pitch in the eighth inning with no issue. That's why I think that he's going to use the rest of these guys as more of a situation basis and say, like, matchups. Like, we talked about this, right? Everybody's saying Aaron Boone was brought in here because of the numbers. He's a numbers game. He knows the numbers. He's going to do all these things. So then why would he then lock one guy in or lock multiple guys into multiple innings? Doesn't make sense. One of the big reasons why they're doing that, why wouldn't they play matchups?
The only reason would be if a guy says, I like knowing I'm pitching the seventh inning because I have a certain timetable. I like to stretch and get my work in and then be ready for the seventh inning every night. That's the only reason. Boone said he was...
Nobody's saying that.
No, I agree. But I was saying if there was a reason, that's a reason. Boone said the other day, he's like, we love our bullpen. We feel we have a lot of guys who can put out fires. So I think you're going to see on a nightly basis anybody coming out of the bullpen. Maybe he goes to the hot hand. Maybe Robertson has been pitching lights out. He needs to get out of a bases loaded jam. I mean, Robertson, we know what he can do with the bases loaded. Like, this dude is Houdini. He gets off on guys on base. Like, that's when he's at his best, when he is back up against the wall.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think we talked about this last week. He showed so much. He showed very differently last year, at the end of last year and into the playoffs, with the fact that he can go in there and throw a ton of pitches and multiple innings. We just never saw that side of D-Rob before.
He was a closer, though. He was a closer.
He was a closer, I'm saying, but we've never seen that. So now that you kind of know what he is, and he's totally fine with doing it, it seems like he's like, you know, do it. I'm ready for this. I'll do whatever the team wants. He's just one of those guys. So I was impressed by that. We know what Chad Green can do. Chad Green can pitch pretty much any time. Last year, the one thing I'll say about Chad Green that will be interesting this year is that I don't think throughout the entire year, right, he never pitched on back-to-back days.
Correct. Never did.
So that was one thing. You know, we know he could throw multiple innings. He could throw two innings, but Girardi never had him throw on back-to-back days. So I'll be curious to see if he does come out and show that if Betances is still struggling and Chad Green is starting to take that eighth inning role. I want to see how that plays into it, if he's actually going to be throwing him back to back. So I'm curious on Boone's stance for that, but it'll be interesting. I mean, there's just so many weapons you have out there that it's hard to make a bad decision, honestly.
And we didn't mention last week the Scranton shuttle, which I think is something they're going to use a ton of as well. Bringing up the last guy in the bullpen, sending him down just so they can get fresh arms in there. Like, Ben Heller is going to be in that role. Jonathan Holder, Domingo Germán, maybe Gallegos, Albert Abreu, Domingo Acevedo. These are just a bunch of names you might see come up in that Scranton shuttle.
Yeah, and those guys, like you said, I think they're going to have – you're going to see some mixing in and out, especially on the home series where they can get a guy up. And in lopsided games, you're going to see some of these guys go in and just, you know, they're going to be burned. They're going to be burned, and another guy will come up. I don't know how often we'll see that early on. They'll probably try to set some roles, but we're going to start seeing that, like, come into July, no doubt.
Yep, and Luis Sessa I didn't mention because I think Sessa is going to be used as the starter who comes up on the Scranton shuttle.
I think Sessa is probably the guy that they're definitely going to be looking for as like their swing guy if they need someone to come up and throw you know, a start. He's probably the guy that they want. And again, man, for whatever reason, he hasn't really shown it. He didn't show it last year.
He's right in between right now. You could tell he's like just on the cusp.
Yeah, I've always said he's got the tools to do it. It's a matter of him executing pitches and, you know, having the between the ears of a major league pitcher. Hopefully he can put it together because I do think he's a talented pitcher.
Question from Jeremy. Who is the one player the Yankees absolutely can't lose to a major injury this season?
Yeah, and I think we both agree on this. I think the one guy that stands out to me is Gary Sanchez. I mean, I think when you look at the, you know, how valuable he is being the catcher, being the you know, the important part of the battery, his defense is, you know, we're seeing hopefully some. He's been working with Sonny Gray a lot, which is awesome because Sonny Gray throws a ton of junk. I love that.
And takes, is somebody who might who Sanchez might have to go out and talk to a billion times. So being on the same page with Sonny Gray is important.
Well, you know, we saw towards the end of the year, like, you know, one of the things that Sonny Gray did, and it's hard to come over in the middle of a season, I think, as a pitcher and catcher battery, especially to learn those guys. He throws a ton of breaking balls and there's a lot of action on them. And a lot of them are meant to be in the dirt. So when you have a guy that's struggling like that, you know, you wonder if there's a confidence level from the pitcher saying, okay, this is the pitch that I would normally throw in this circumstance, but there's a guy on third. I'm not sure if that ball's going to get blocked. Look, I am totally wide open and clean slate with Gary Sanchez and his blocking abilities this year. Everything you hear is that the work ethic is there. He put in time. He's been, you know, trying to get better at that. So I think we're going to see a much better defensive blocking wise Gary Sanchez. We know the arm's there. So this guy is so important because of those two things, knowing the rotation like he does already. And then obviously the bat. I mean, he's a 40-plus home run guy.
If it's not Sanchez, though, like who is it? Like, maybe on the pitching side, who is it?
I think Severino is a very important piece. I think Severino has to be just has to stay as that dominant number one because I don't think anybody has a ton of faith that Tanaka is going to be the same guy he was in the second half. Like, fully. I don't think anybody's like fully confident in that. We're all hopeful and we think that can happen. But I think Severino is a big year because I think if Severino were to come out and have somewhat of a slump, then, you know, that could be a linchpin. But the problem is, I don't even think I'm saying this because you asked me the question, but
right,
at the same time,
you had to give an answer. But the reason it's Sanchez,
Sonny Gray helps.
The reason it's Sanchez is because Romine is the backup and you're looking at an everyday catcher of Romine. Whereas like if Aaron Judge goes down, that absolutely sucks, but you pencil in like Stanton to right field and then someone else is DHing. And it's like the offense, the lineup can make up an injury from somebody like that more than they can make up for Sanchez because of what it means, who's going to be playing for Sanchez.
I think the second guy in the field to me that would go down, like there's so many valuable guys, but when you're talking about, you know, both sides, defense, offense, leadership, the way what they do at the plate, I think Didi's another guy because there's not really a shortstop.
I knew
you were
going to say that.
There's no shortstop. But you know why it's funny? Have guys who can play other positions, but shortstop's one of the ones that we don't have a lot of depth in.
Do you know why it's funny? Because both of those guys missed the month of April last year and the team was fine.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm talking about extended times. Like, I think there's guys that can plug in, no problem. Like my boy Toe. I was going to say our boy, but it's not our boy. It's my boy.
Yeah, we're talking like, I think Jeremy is meaning like 3 months or more.
Yeah. And you know, if a guy like Didi went down, like that's when Ronald Torres, that's when Torres comes up.
Yep.
And we're going to, I mean, he would play short at that point, most likely.
Okay. Greg from New York says, I'm watching the spring training game and I figured I'd see what you think of some over under predictions. So Didi Gregorius hits 25 homers over under.
I'm saying over. He's proof that he just keeps going up. So I'm going to say over.
He hit 25 last year and he missed the month of April. So
right. And he's got a lot of support in this lineup.
The only problem he's going to be hitting lower.
He's hitting lower, but he missed a month. So, and he hit 25. I mean, I don't know.
But he might not get the same pitches because let's face it, pitchers were like, oh, if I have to attack Judge or Sanchez or Didi, I'm going to attack Didi. And Didi made him pay. But now it's going to be Didi hitting 7. Maybe he doesn't get that same sort of challenge because he's at the bottom of the order and there's other guys you can attack.
Potentially, but there's also, you know, theoretically, there's more guys on base as well.
Yes.
You know, like there's going to be less room to put him
as
well.
A good lineup helps everyone in the lineup because
up and down, it helps.
Puts the pitcher on their heels and gets things going. Yeah, I agree.
And one of the big reasons why I think the power numbers have come with Didi, one, he's become a better hitter since he's been in New York, but the ballpark absolutely plays to him. Like he is beautiful for Yankee Stadium. He is absolutely tailor-made for Yankee Stadium because those line drives are going out and they're home runs. And he hits a lot of those line drives.
I'm also taking the over, but he's going to hit 26 home runs.
All right.
Gardner appears in 130 games, which would actually kind of be low for Gardner. I mean, he's had some injuries in the past, but last year, I don't know what he played.
I don't see any reason why, unless something were to happen in the field, like the guy takes care of himself so well. And I know he gets beat up because of the way he plays. And that's why his injuries come about. It's like, it's bumps and bruises and things he does on the field. It's not a lack of taking care of his body. Like the guy's in phenomenal shape. I'm going over with Brett Gardner.
So I just said, oh, he's had some injuries. He's played at least 145 games every year since 2013.
The problem with him is that we know he's injured, but he's still out there.
He's still out there going.
He may be going through an 0 for 20.
He's balling.
Because his wrist is hurt.
Right.
But he's still going out there and playing. Like he does not like to be out of the lineup. So
I'm definitely going over. This year, though, it might not be because of injuries, because like other guys are playing left field.
Yeah. 130 games, though, that's a lot of games. That's a
That's 32 games he misses.
Yeah, that's high to me. That's a lot of games. Okay.
I think it's actually an inch. My first gut was like, oh, definitely over, but now it's interesting. I'm taking the over, but that's a good number. Gary Sanchez, he's got two for him. Sanchez, 100 RBI.
Over.
10 pass balls.
Unfortunately, over.
Jordan Montgomery, 125.
How many pass balls did Sanchez have last year?
It was like 16.
Okay.
All right. Answer Jordan Montgomery.
That would cut it down 50%. 125 innings pitched. I am going to say over. I think they're going to be giving him more innings this year. I think last year they actually limited his innings, and I think he's going to be cut free this year. Like, let's see what you got, kid.
I agree. Yeah, he pitched over that last year. Where is pass balls? It should be on his baseball reference page, right?
Yeah, I would think so. The next one is Chad Green. One start for Chad Green. I'm 100% taking the under.
I agree with you on that.
This is not fun when we agree on everything. I don't think so. Chad Green, I assume he's in this prop because he came in as a starting pitcher to camp. But again, we've already talked about this. We heard what Boone has said about this. He came in because that was what he's always done. He's come in as a starting pitcher. He stretched out like a starting pitcher because that's what Chad Green's used to. They're going to be using him in the bullpen. I don't see them using him as a swing guy, even if. I think the one guy that they would use over him if we're taking somebody out of the bullpen is Adam Warren.
I nailed it. 16 pass balls for Gary Sanchez.
All right, so 10 is definitely an improvement.
Definitely an improvement. Yeah. The last one is Greg Bird, 350 at-bats.
I don't want to answer this question. I don't want to answer this one.
I'm making you answer it because I'm going to jinx the shit out of him.
I'm not saying under. I'm saying over, okay? I can't say under. He's going to hit over because he's going to stay healthy. We had freak injuries with Greg Bird. That's what we had, freak injuries, not things that are going to linger. The bone is removed. He no longer has this extra bird bone in his foot, and he's going to be fine. He's going to be great, and I think he's going to be over. The only way he's going under, I'm saying, like, if one of these injuries were to come about, because I do believe he's going to be a productive play. I don't think it's going to be a, you know, any problem with him playing.
The last question, I figured.
But my fingers are crossed.
This would be a good one for you. So Troy Gunn at @Bama_Yankees on Twitter says, can anyone tell me why Donnie Baseball is not a Hall of Famer? Kirby, I believe he's talking about Kirby Puckett, is a first ballot with lesser numbers. Anyone can explain this to me, or am I missing something? I know you're a huge Mattingly guy. And like he was, the thing is, like you were, I'm not making an old joke here, but he was your guy growing up, was Mattingly, whereas like Jeter was my guy.
Yeah, Mattingly was my guy. Definitely, he was the first guy, the first player that I ever idolized or was the guy that I followed the most. To me, it's a shame that he's not in. You know, he definitely tailed off at the end, but it was all because of a back injury. The thing with him is he was such a great hitter, such a great defender. I think eventually he's going to get in, but I don't think it's going to be by the writers' vote. I think they're going to
He's already off. I mean, he only received, the highest he ever received was 28% of the votes, and that was first year of eligibility. So he could get in by
the committee, whatever the committee is.
Yeah,
I think that's going to happen because didn't Alan Trammell and Jack Morris were just let in right by that committee? I think that's a Mattingly move.
The thing is, I don't think Mattingly is a Hall of Famer because he didn't have anything really past age 32, but his prime years were so freaking good. Like I have his numbers right here from 1984 to 1989. He won an MVP and his average season was a .327 batting average with a 902 OPS. So 27 homers, 114 RBIs with a 43 doubles was his average season. He was just an absolute hitting machine for those prime years.
I think baseball would be looking at Mattingly a little different too if he was playing on good teams. It's right. Still like 96 to me is bittersweet because it was the first year without Mattingly, and 95 ended with the loss to Seattle, and then Tino comes over and takes over first base. It was like a very weird transition. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember reading too, like his back was, he had back injuries, but there was also something about like, he wanted to retire because he wanted to spend more time with his family. It's like there was a decision made both personally and injury. Like there was a lot of things happening, I think at that point, with him, but he's talked about that he left also because of, he wanted to spend more time with his family. And I got to respect that the guy just unfortunately played on, he at the very end of his career, the Yankees started putting together some good teams, but for the most part, he played on some pretty bad Yankees teams.
I have to wonder also if this happened with other players too, where guys who started to be on the ballots in the late 90s and early 2000s actually had the PED era hurt them in the sense where writers were like, well, this guy wasn't as good as these guys playing now. They didn't the writers didn't realize what was going on with the PED era at that time. They saw guys mashing 50 home runs and they're like, well, Don Mattingly never hit 50 home runs. He's not as good. But then a couple years later, you're like, hindsight, oh, that guy was juicing his brains out, whereas Don Mattingly was just a filthy ball player.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very fair point. I think when you're in that moment and you're not seeing, the reason why these guys are hitting the way they are, it's probably going to enter into the thought process of some of these guys. So it's a shame. I think because when you look back, and I'm obviously biased because, he was my guy. But when you look back, one of my big things when I'm looking at a Hall of Famer, like the first thing I think of is the eye test. Like, if I, when I think of this guy, do I think of him as one of the best players of his era when he was playing? And I think Dom Mattingly was one of the most dominant players when he was playing, 100%.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I do. And then I would go back and look at his numbers. And like, yeah, he didn't have the longest career. And a lot of that was because of injury. And it's unfortunate. But
you're probably right, though. If he had the same exact career, but the Yankees won like two World Series in the 80s, then people might think of him as a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. He gets more recognition at that point, too. Like a lot of people will say that the winning doesn't matter. It doesn't make it shouldn't be in the case of the Hall of Famer, but it 100% does.
Yeah. Final topic of the day is one of our favorites, and that's MLB dumb rules. So the Arizona Diamondbacks are going to have bullpen carts. I think there's some other teams that might have the bullpen cart, too, to try and speed up the game. Where they'll shuffle in these guys on little golf carts to the mound so they don't have to jog their butts in. Yeah.
Do you like it? Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it. You know, maybe we get some mascots on there and, you know, it's speeding up the game.
How about we put advertisements on the golf cart and then don't go to commercial?
Love it.
Like save time that way. Because all this is going to do is save about 7 seconds.
Unless David Robertson is running in and it will
lose.
Actually be longer.
You're going to lose 2 seconds.
Yeah, I don't. It means nothing to me. I mean, it's just it's stupid. Who cares? Who cares?
I don't know.
Maybe
pace of play thing is something that like MLB is clearly worried about. Yet they're not taking actual legitimate action. They're taking stupid action. They're taking these stupid little go around rules. Oh, I'm going to save 20 seconds here. We're going to have the intentional base on ball so the guy doesn't have to throw a pitch. Save 40 seconds there. How about you just cut commercial time and really save it? No, they're not going to do that because it's money.
Yeah, I mean the one thing I talked about before that will absolutely speed up the game. It's like the most logical thing to do is just have the umpires call more strikes. How about that? How about we just call some more strikes? How about you get rid of your little tight zone, start calling the corners, start calling maybe even a little outside the corners, and let's get this game going. The back in the day, there were not very many tight strike zones.
No, instead they're just going to institute 500 dumb rules to speed up the game. A total of 6 minutes.
All right, Matt's talking about on Facebook the picture-in-picture, the commercial picture-in-picture. I love that too because it's fun to see. That's almost like being at the game. You can see what's happening, and I like doing that. I like seeing what's happening, the dynamics of what's going on.
Yeah, and if you can cut 30 seconds each half inning off, then that's some legitimate time at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So before we leave, though, I just want to mention that Scott and I talked kicked around doing movie reviews, baseball movie reviews. We did it once last year. We did the 61 movie, the Billy Crystal movie about Mantle and Maris. We had a lot of fun doing it. People liked it. We want to do more of them this year. So tweet us at Yankees Podcast which baseball movies you'd like us to watch and review. It could also be baseball shows. We also talked about doing the Bronx is Burning one, that series about, it was like a mini series or something like that. So we're open to ideas. It obviously has to be Yankees or baseball related, but we're open to a lot of ideas. Any last words before we get out of here?
Nope. Same thing I said last week. No injuries. Let's keep it. Keep these guys, you know, throwing some baseballs around, getting loose, getting ready to go. I don't care what happens in spring training as far as results. I just want I want my guys to stay healthy. That's it. And tune their bodies, ready to go. Opening day is the only one that counts.
It's right around the corner. We're almost there.
It's coming up faster than we realize.
Talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.